Scaling your business is the ultimate goal, but you're guaranteed to have things break as you grow. How do you prepare for things breaking as you scale, and how do you overcome them when they do? In this episode, we're going to share 5 things that broke as we scaled and how you can be ready to overcome them. In this episode, we're going to talk about scaling challenges, and Jeremy and I are going to share the things that have gone wrong at our various businesses as we scaled. I remember when we were starting our businesses, this was one of the things I had anxiety about. It's like, oh gosh, as we scale, what's going to break? And the truth is, you don't always know.
No, although I can say in property management, it became pretty clear that there were changes at 100 units, 450 units, and then somewhere around 1,000. And every industry is going to have its own kind of numbers, where when you get to a certain point, you kind of have to do a reshuffling of everything and reconfigure the way that your business operates. Because if you don't, at least in property management, you stalled. You get to 100, you don't do anything different, you're going to always be in the 100, 125. You get to 450, you're never going to get past 450.
And your procedures really do have to change depending on how big your company is.
Everything.
And then the other big number is 250 employees, where at 250 employees, you don't know who anyone is anymore. You're like, who's Fernanda? And so when you don't know who people are, that causes a lot of things to break.
Yeah.
So there are these kind of metrics, and in whatever industry you're in, if you talk to people who are farther along in it, you can kind of deduce where that change and anticipate it a little bit more easily. Doesn't make it easier.
Heed those warnings. Well, I do think if you heed the warnings and you know it's coming, and you have processes and procedures, which, I mean, 75% of people that hear us say that are just like, oh, yeah, but I can't right now. Okay. But you're going to stall. And just know that you're going to stall. You're not going to move forward. And don't let that get you down, because you knew it. You heard it here. We told you.
Jeez. Okay. Mr. Tough Guy over here.
There's no way you can scale if you don't have some sort of documentation to look at and figure out, to analyze, to see what you can or might not be able to do better.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's talk about the things that broke. And I want to talk about the interesting one that now we're on the other side of, but caused me grief last year. And that was when you sell into a very specific trade organization or a group of people, and you've saturated that market. And then you don't know, because you've never tested it, if other marketing strategies are going to help you grow at the same pace that you grew before. So our example is in virtual assistants. Obviously, we sell virtual assistants and call centers and back office accounting and all that kind of stuff. But we started in the trade group NARPM, the National Association of Residential Property Managers, because we were property managers. So we had relationships in that trade group. And then at a point, you kind of are saturated, like you've saturated that particular trade group.
And not just because you dominate it, but also because at a certain point, your competition starts to catch on. Potential competition starts to catch on that, oh, there's money to be made in this industry. And then you've got 17 competitors in that same trade
group. And the trade group doesn't grow exponentially every year either.
Yeah.
So it's just a finite amount of customers. So then we had to totally start a new marketing campaign and hope that we could get into other verticals. And you really don't know when you're in the middle of it if that's possible until you do it. And thankfully, we figured out a way. And so we're, you know, doing well in manufactured homes, doing well in multifamily and, IMN, like a different trade group. And so it's going great. But we didn't know, and that's something that I think people don't consider. I have another friend who's in an industry where they do like construction, and they moved into a completely different place where she has a summer house or whatever, like a, and there's a definite need for construction, but because she's not living there, you know, her whole bubbly personality and, you know, getting people, I mean, everybody loves her, everyone wants to work with her, but doing construction in the city where she doesn't know anyone, you know, it causes its own stressors, even though there's not a lot of competition. There are a lot of good reasons to go into this area. She's going to have to do marketing differently than she did locally in her hometown. And so those are the instances that really test whether your company can or cannot scale, and to think through how you're going to market into the future can be helpful if you're on like a big scaling move and you're anticipating big growth. Think through this piece of it proactively.
Well, that kind of dovetails into sales too, because sales compensation has been, and I think is going through a little bit of a revolution. So
like not just with our company, but like in sales compensation right now in the literature, all companies are feeling pressure to reduce sales compensation.
Well, yeah, because, you know, for so many years, this, and it is weird because when I first started coming into the professional realm, you know, we were bird dogs. When I was in sales, we had to look for new opportunities. We had to bring new opportunities. We had to close new opportunities, and we had to maintain those new opportunities. And, but then, I don't know, it must have been about 20 years ago, sales started to take on more of a kind of a client management role. It started being more of a leads production facility, except the compensation packages seem to have stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening now around, at least certainly in the United States, is that it's starting to be realized that line on the profit and loss isn't jiving right. Like it's the definition of sales over the course of the last couple decades has moved. And so the old compensation packages that were really just overcompensation for more client management, they're starting to go away.
So here's what I think has happened. Back in the day, with marketing, they would always say, you know, 20% of your marketing actually does the work. 80% is basically a complete waste of money. The problem is you don't know which 20% is working. And that has changed with digital marketing because you can really see what is truly driving traffic to your website, driving business to close. And I think people are moving a lot of their budget from salespeople bird dogging because people don't answer their phones to calls that they don't know.
Yeah.
And there's so much filtering that goes through that it's really hard to break through. And there's so much spam email in your inbox. Those types of strategies that did work back in the day no longer work. And so companies are taking that information and instead of asking salespeople to do those activities, they're now putting that money towards marketing campaigns that they can measure the results in. And with that added expenses going to marketing, it doesn't make sense to pay salespeople so much. And then even in our personal case, like to get this more personal, back when our company was smaller with the virtual assistants, our salespeople did everything. They found candidates, they filtered candidates, they talked to clients, they did the onboard. I mean, they literally, their job was end-to-end customer service through the whole process. And that obviously takes a sophisticated person to know how to recruit, how to interview, how to matchmake. And then since time has gone on, those jobs have been broken up into departments and different more specialized roles. And so the compensation obviously has to change as the role changes. And you have to pay for all the individuals who are part of this process that add value to this process but aren't this one individual. And so obviously it's really hard for a team to be like, sorry, I can't pay you this. Or the compensation that you had was based on this time commitment. Like, oh, it's going to take you a bazillion hours to get this person hired because you have to do all these pieces of the puzzle. And so the compensation was based on it taking all that time. But now it doesn't take as much of your particular time. So that compensation package just didn't scale because your job has completely transformed. So these are the things that are really, it's hard to have these conversations with your salespeople. If you're like us, you go too long with the wrong compensation package because you just don't want to rock the boat and you've got other priorities and then it becomes even a worse problem. But this is definitely something that's going to break. And I've heard it with other businesses as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real thing. And when I found that out, the second I had heard that theory, I thought, oh, okay, that explains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening, so beware.
Yeah, your sales compensation's going to break. if as you scale, if the job changes in any way, you have to compensate differently. And I think just being open and honest with your team and being realistic and giving them time to acclimate to a new sales compensation package, those are the kind ways to keep morale high while you make the necessary changes. Okay, the other thing that breaks for, I think, all companies is human resources, because it's a hard part of a business because it doesn't generate revenue and it doesn't create in and of itself operational success. It feels like an extra, it feels like a money suck, not a, you know what I'm saying, Jeremy?
No, yeah.
And so it's usually like, and I hate using this redheaded stepchild thing because I actually have a friend who's a redheaded stepchild. And ever since I told her, I said something about a redheaded stepchild. Ever since then, I like think about how that was like such a mean thing to say to her. So anyway, I'm not going to say that, even though I just did. Anyway, it's like the part of the business that just gets neglected. Let's say that. And so because it gets neglected, then it breaks and it causes tremendous problems, because it's really important, obviously, to pay people the right amount on time.
And also just the rules, you know, HR does so much. They help make sure that the company is protected from
lawsuits.
And, you know, you have to have certain things in place, especially the larger that you get, that help ensure that the company isn't breaking the law on a consistent basis for lack of knowing that you have to do something, like fair housing, as an example, to parallel it. And fair housing, you might not have trained your leasing agents that you can't take into consideration whether they have children or not. It seems like one of those nice things you would ask them. Do you have any children? Oh, the third floor is probably not going to be what you want. You're probably going to want on the first floor. Like almost in that it feels like you're tending to the client, but it's so illegal that it will destroy your company if it's ever found out.
So HR is the same way.
HR is the same exact way. If you don't do things, it doesn't matter what country you're in, I can tell you. You have to have the things in place for HR to help make sure that your employees, especially the larger you get, you become less connected to them. There has to be infrastructure in place that helps make sure that everything that's going on in that background, that HR environment, is legal and is helping your employees to live a better life. And I would say, at a certain point, it makes a lot of sense to use what is referred to here in the United States as a PEO, professional employer organization, because they take a lot of that headache away from you and protect you to a huge degree from you being your own worst enemy.
So, you know, performance improvement plans done right really is important. There is a way to fire people that is fair to them and is legal, and people get that wrong all the time. And I have friends, because we're in EO, friends who are in worlds of hurt, long lawsuits over firing people inappropriately. And so it's just really important to have a great handbook, and so that there's written documentation of what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. And when you fire people, it comes back to that handbook, and people generally don't have very good handbooks. So HR, another one is in other countries, they don't have this taboo of talking about how much they make. So one of the areas that we've been good at improving in our HR is banded pay, meaning if you're in a specific role at specific levels, the pay has a range and stays within that range. And man, when people don't operate with that kind of consistency, with that kind of sophistication, we've seen so many problems.
Yeah, because in a lot of our clients, they have the best of intentions, and they give huge raises that don't make sense.
And then they hire someone better the next time, and then they're like, oh shoot, they're making 30% less.
They're making 30% less. They're a better employee, and that's kind of operating from that scarcity mindset where, oh, okay, I'm going to give a $2 an hour pay raise because I can't risk losing them. Frankly, if the way that you're retaining an employee is only through $2 an hour or whatever the number is for you, then you know intuitively that you've not created the kind of environment that helps maintain the relationship with the remote professional, with the employee in the long term, because you're afraid that they're going to leave. Like, it's, they've got to make, there's other things
that keep
benefits. Moving. Benefits are a big one.
Culture.
The culture, the regular meetings, the feeling a part of something, in some cases, the purpose of the business. There's other reasons to keep people. You can help your employee live a better life in the 8 hours that they're with you than hoping that they have more money to spend in the time that they're not with you. You know, work, there are formulas that help you do this, but and the larger you get, the less connected you are, the more likely you are to start doing silly little things like compensating people way more than market, which doesn't only do you harm, it also does them harm in the long run. Like what Gwenna just said, you find someone that's better and you're like, oh shit, I'm overpaying.
We did this.
Then you have to get rid of them.
We did this at Wistar Group. There was an employee who was like insanely paid, and then I mean the work quality was, he was I think one of our first employees in Mexico, insanely paid, and he had created this very nice lifestyle for himself, but then as we hired more people and he wasn't keeping up and it just wasn't working out, we fired him, and there was zero way that he was going to make even a remotely as much money as he was making with us. And he had a mortgage based on that kind of amount. He was sending his kid to private school and all this. And so we really ruined his life. So
I don't know about ruined his life.
Well, I mean, you kind of
set it up. But
set
but
it
that's
up
the
very
exact
badly.
Point.
And
that's
so,
the point.
So, but these are the reasons why HR does break as you scale, because hopefully maybe you can think through how much you pay people ahead of time. But man, most small companies make these mistakes. I can't think of any small company I know of that hasn't made a pay compensation error.
Especially in my generation, people are just like, you know what? That the idea that you should just be able to tell somebody you're fired, and no,
well,
you can't do that.
Well, and also just paying people. I mean, we have a labor crisis in the United States. I know a lot of people are paying people way too much and can't get out of the hole they're in. But just don't feel bad if you did it. Make a correction. It will be okay.
But be more to your employees than just. And than just the paycheck. It's a short-term strategy anyway, if that's the only thing holding them on.
Okay, so another one that breaks is your communication strategy. So bad mass emails are going to cause you worlds of hurt as you scale, because if you have something confusing in that email that went out to your whole team, you're going to get as many people that you sent it to emails back asking the question of the thing that was confusing or stressed people out. So mass communication done well is very important.
But by mass, it's got to be in that over 200, probably 300 to 1,000, 1,200. You know, that's where the mass starts to get confusing. If you've got, you know, 40 employees or something, you still want to be careful with it. But you send it out to 1,300 people and there's a little bit of confusion in it, you're screwed for the next week trying to make sure that everything gets settled.
It could also just be your clients. Like if your client base scales, that's another potential
big
error.
One.
Mass emails to clients can be so detrimental. So be very careful about that. The other one that's been really interesting that came up actually in my EO group is we sent out a survey to all members of our chapter, which is like 120 people. And surveys take goodwill. It takes time of your, whoever you're at. I mean, time is our most precious resource. So if you're asking for 15 minutes of someone's time to fill out a survey, and then you don't end up actually getting the information back that you want, then the survey was worthless and you can't just send out another survey.
No.
So it's like the goodwill has been depleted and now you have to wait 6 months to a year to send out another survey to get the information you want. So it's best to really think through, what is the point of the survey? What is the information I'm looking to get back? And I'll just give you an example. We had a international event around Berkshire Hathaway Days through EO last year. And so we sent out a survey to those who went, and we asked them, would you be willing to pay for this experience if we were to do it again? Because we wanted to know if we could increase our budget for speaker this year. And so we needed to know if we could add to the budget. And the way it was worded was, would you pay $0 to $250 and then $251 to $300, whatever the rates went up from there. But we didn't ask, like, do you think you should pay at all? And so, and we're not going to ask $300, but we might ask $250, but we don't know if that was, they just.
Zero or 250.
Yeah, it's like a huge range. And so now we still don't have the answer to the question of if people will come if we charge them $250. We don't know, because maybe it was zero to 250. So we didn't get the information we needed, and now we still don't have the answer, and we depleted all the goodwill with those people who came. So surveys being done well and being very thoughtfully created is hugely important. The last one I want to talk about is email breaking and getting a ticketing system sooner rather than later, where you have the transparency, where you can have KPIs on how quickly customers or employees are gotten back to. Those KPIs of what was, the transparency of what was actually said in these emails, the quality control aspect of having having communication being an open, transparent ticketing system rather than email system is so important for any scaling business. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, totally.
And it will, unless you get out of email being the primary way that people communicate and having an expectation that can be in your email hole, and you might be really good at pretending you work, and it's not until you get fired and we see the 1,000 emails that unanswered emails in your email inbox that we figure out that nothing was done. Please don't let that happen to you. Just start a ticketing system now with full transparency, and then you won't have this issue, and you can scale in peace.
You can keep those emails out of your system. And fascinating statistic. The percent of income, the cost of front office expenses is identical to what it was in 1985 when PCs first started coming out. And what they attribute that to is the use of email. So in all these other areas of business, companies have been able to scale with technology, but in the front office, no businesses are scaling. And so the takeaway there is, what's that book I read? I'll have to put it down in the link, but the takeaway there is that, technology, the use of email has been a detriment to efficiency in computers ever since email and PCs first came out. No efficiencies at all.
So
don't use email as a checklist. Don't use email. Well, we've had episodes on this, I guess, but
this is Jeremy's like favorite topic.
Yeah. It just drives me nuts. I get 7 emails a day. That aren't junk, and then I send those to junk. I mean, I'm very careful what I do with my email, but having emails as your to-do list is, because then you feel like you're working when you're doing email, and really what you're trying to do is get your emails out. There's no deep thought that can go in. There's no structure in an email that's like, oh, let me deep think on this. No, it's respond to it or not. And when you do that, you take away your opportunity to do some deep work.
Okay, so last one, because we really need to go, but I think this is important. People who are drama are not going to scale with your business. And kind of, I learned this from a friend of mine who runs a very large company. I think they're going to have like $250 million this year. But he was very unemotional about people not scaling with the business and making decisions completely based on skill set, ability. He had no problem having frank conversations. He wasn't worried about people loving him. And because of that, his business has grown faster than I think any of my other friends' businesses. But just letting go of anyone who's drama and knowing that certain people will not scale with your business, and be unemotional when it's time to separate paths. will help your business scale faster. I mean, not that you don't work with people when you can, but when you see the writing on the wall, just make a intentional decision.
But I would also caveat this, because a lot of the times that we've had to get rid of people because they aren't scaling with the company, quote unquote, is oftentimes, I think, it could be attributed to them not having been trained correctly. So it is a fact that if you just have somebody that's working in your company, the company grows and there's no intervention, they will, as a matter of fact, most people will not be able to scale to the next level. But if you factor in instances where there's good training for what they do or whatever they're interested in, then you actually can move into the future with that employee, because often I think drama is created by people not having the ability to be able to move into the future because for lack of having been trained. And so that manifests itself as disquietness or whatever.
Drama.
Concern. And then ultimately that becomes drama.
Well, so here though is the what I was, maybe I should be more clear on what I'm talking about. There are people who hate change.
Yeah, they're not.
And they cause so much headache when a change is created and make it like so like no one's going to be able to do X, Y, and Z if you make this change, and they cause drama because they hate change. And so that was the drama I'm talking about. You're absolutely right though. If people aren't trained, they can't move forward. But people who just are an obstacle, stick in the mud, don't like change, won't support the scaling of the business, those people have to go, even if they are technically good at their role, and you won't miss them. So anyway, so those are the scaling issues that we have gone through, that we've had the stress of, the heartache from. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully you all can learn from those and not make those same mistakes. But I think that there's no way to get around some level of stress, discomfort, things breaking as you scale a business. You just can't really anticipate exactly what it is going to that is going to break. But what I can promise you is it will never be boring. Leading your team is crucial to overcoming adversity in business, and that happens on a project-by-project basis. Download our ultimate guide to successful projects for free, as this guide will help you be strategic and get results with every project. The link is in the show notes.